thank you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our 15th edition this season of the Talkin' Hawks podcast exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. As I am every week, I'm joined by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell. And Chris, I got to say that they stayed in it against Nebraska. They had a, you know, they were in position to maybe pull an upset there, but it just didn't end up materializing. Iowa ended up losing 13-7. Nebraska wins the Legends Division, and we'll be playing Saturday, and we'll discuss that game later on. But you look at Iowa, ends the season 4-8 and on a six-game losing streak. When you got a chance to look back at Friday's game, what stood out to you?
Well, when I look back on Friday's game, the things that stood out, those guys went out there and played hard. And, you know, and it looked pretty good in the beginning and things like that. It was just one of those deals where they were doing what they can, and Nebraska was doing what they can. And when Nebraska went up, it was pretty much like, oh, God, you know what I mean? They just deer in the headlights for the most part to me. But the guys stuck it in and everything. And I just felt that the guys went out there and played hard. And it was one of those deals where we can sit here and pinpoint something to where, like, the team just looked completely bad. This was a solid performance, if you ask me, after looking at this whole six-game slot.
I'll say this. If you had told me at this time a week ago when we last met that Iowa was going to hold Nebraska to 13 points after what we had seen from the defense each of the previous 5 weeks, I would have said, you know what, they have a pretty decent shot at pulling an upset if they could get anything going offensively. I thought the defense, like you said, they played as well as you could have asked. You know, and the offense probably did about what you would have expected, but the problem was, to me, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on this. I agree the players gave the effort, but to me, this game and why Iowa ended up losing falls on coaching. And it's not just Ferentz, in my opinion. I think it's both coordinators, Greg Davis and Phil Parker, as well, because there's just times it almost felt like they were playing more not to lose in a situation where they had absolutely nothing to lose. They could have threw everything in the kitchen sink at Nebraska because the Huskers were the team that had everything on the line. They had a division title and going to Indianapolis on the line. Iowa's already going in 4-7. That's why I'd posed the question before, okay, how do you treat this week considering that this is the end of your season? They talk about wanting to go out swinging, and, you know, I thought the effort was there from the players, but I didn't really get the sense that they fully went out swinging like you would have maybe expected.
Yeah, I was going to say one thing, like you said, with that is that when you have a game left and you have nothing to lose for the most part, just like you say, right, you throw the whole kitchen sink, as you say, or whatnot. And like you say, it's times when the coaches sit there. I mean, you got to keep the pedal to the metal. And that's one thing that the guys, you know, the players was doing it. But like you say, it's times when you see coaches sit there and just take the game away from guys. I'm not saying that the coaches took the game away from the guys, but they could have been more aggressive on each side of the ball, you ask me. With the defense, you know, we haven't really played much aggressiveness compared to when Norm was here.
Right. And just, we might as well just look at here at the defense right now, because one thing I noticed, and this I stem off of a conversation you and I had during the podcast last week, you said you were hoping to see some nickel, maybe a little dime, but definitely some nickel against Nebraska. As it turned out, they didn't run any nickel or dime whatsoever. They were in a base 4-3 the entire game. Do you get the sense that that's how that should have been approached?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it now, and you sit here and say Taylor Martinez, you'd be like, okay, we're going to run some nickel. We have to run some nickel because this guy is going to actually run and get outside the blocks. I mean, get outside the tackles or whatnot. And you just go scramble. And you didn't see much of that. We pretty much kept those guys contained. The guys, you know, the starting line linebackers came back or whatnot after whatever was going on, and you sit there and you scratch your head like, wow, how come we couldn't do this all season? A lot of people like to talk from hindsight or whatnot, but I thought they did a really good job not to play any at all. Really.
Yeah, well, I asked because obviously, you know, aside from the first drive where Nebraska was able to move the ball, and then Iowa managed to hold them to three, the one thing that stood out to me was from the second possession there, on pretty much the entire game, there was a couple of substitutions up front, but pretty much the entire game, they played at the same 11 guys on that side of the ball. The defensive line, you had Steve Bigak and Dominic Alves were on the outside, and you had Trinka Passat and Darian Cooper were the two D tackles. They pretty much were played, that was the front four pretty much the entire game. You didn't see a whole lot of rotating. The linebackers stayed the same. You had Morris and Hitchens both back along with Kirksey. Those three guys played their positions. And then in the secondary, Colin Sleeper came in for Nico Law, and you pretty much had him and Tanner Miller as the safeties, and then Hyde and Lowry as the corners. And there was one sequence where Miller was taken out, and they put John Loudermilk in. But for the most part, again, the same 11 guys were out there. And the reason I mentioned that is obviously they managed to keep Nebraska in check for most of the first half, and the Huskers really couldn't move the ball at all. But then came the second half. They made adjustments, and at that point you're starting to wonder when Nebraska's having success again. Okay, maybe is this when you mix things up a little bit more?
I was going to say, with us being able to hold with our smaller rotation compared to what we had in the past, is it a communication deal. Mm-hmm. You know, you can think about communication like, okay, instead of seeing the guys moving every two, maybe three plays, depending on how the drive is going, but you have guys just out there. Hey, I got this, you got that, and so on, communicating and things like that, compared to you have a freshman coming in at nickel and dime, and then you have some other guy coming in at linebacker or either. You just have some guys just all out of whack. You know, it's a different offense and things like that. But as you say, as the game, the more games you play, the more experience you get, and you should be able to do the rotating if you need it. But we've seen a lot from this past Saturday with the guys that we have, and we just go with what we have. Usually in the past, we've usually seen a nickel dime here and there, but we didn't rotate much on the defensive line, and maybe that was probably a big key.
Yeah, well, and I think the other thing, too, and in fairness, I will say this. I think one other key thing that happened in the second half was Nebraska had Rex Burkhead come back in the game, and it was the first time he played in over a month. And obviously, he brought a completely different dynamic to their backfield that, you know, no offense to Amir Abdul and Taylor Martinez, they're both effective runners, but neither one of them has, I guess, like the mental toughness to be able to make some of the plays that you get out of a guy like Rex Burkhead. The play that immediately comes to mind is he's running up the middle, and it looks like he's got stuffed for maybe it's only like a 2 or 3 yard gain, but he kept pushing, and eventually it's a 7 or 8 yard run by him.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing about Rex Burkhead, and you know, him being the player of the year last year in one of those deals, his mentality is just a hard, tough nose guy that's going to get you those extra yards. You know, he's going to keep his feet turning and everything, trying to push that pile with himself on top of some linemen that might be pushing him if he needed. But he's a big guy, a big, strong guy that'll pretty much just make your defense line suffer and, you know, start gassing for air and things like that. So, I mean, his aspect of the game is completely different from a doula, where a doula can make you pretty much run left and right, east and west, and then you have Burkhead punching you in your mouth. That'll really make your defense start to think and second-guess themselves.
And now switching over to the offensive side of the ball. Listen, the opening drive, they went right down the field, got 7 points. It looked pretty decent. Nebraska then made adjustments, and Iowa, it reached a point that in the second half, their offense was just completely non-existent, especially in the fourth quarter. I guess I don't know. I don't know how you could explain it. I mean, I think it's pretty easy to explain why they struggled, but it reached a point. Did you get the sense that it was almost as if Nebraska knew exactly not just what play was going to be run, but where it was going?
When you look at film and if you're breaking things down, you know, by person, player, and things like that, you sit there and be like, okay, this formation. All right, Mark Wiseman has 60% of the plays, and 60% more of the plays is usually going to be a run instead of a passer. So some film gets broken down to the nitty-gritty, and you sit there and see it, and the guys are like, okay, I mean, you have one or two options and things like that, and if you don't have your playmakers making plays, do you really think that your playmakers gonna make plays at the end of the season in certain formations when you're so used to doing something and that's your most successful things? And it becomes hard on our offense, and then you sit there and be like, all right, Nebraska's, they're gonna look for it. You know that they're gonna look for it no matter what, but you still got to go out there and do your play and do it to the fullest and play hard. And I feel that Nebraska just sat there and said, all right, we know what you're going to do. not bring it. And that's what it came down to. And with us, we weren't able to be able to open up our offense like we did in the first drive, the first couple of drives, trying to get something out of everything.
I got two follow-ups on that. The first one I'll ask, how much of that do you think is Rick Kaczynski and his familiarity with Iowa?
And I think that had probably had a lot to do with it, with his familiarity with Iowa. But at the same time, I mean, players got to go out there and play at the end of the day.
Right.
But, you know, he has been here. He coached the offensive line. He knows our defensive line. So he had gave a lot of cues and things like that, and especially him knowing some of the players on the team. That was a good aspect of him playing in the chess game that we had this past Saturday, Friday.
And then my second follow-up to that is, how much of that do you think is just the audibles? Because it seemed like a lot of the – almost every audible that was called, maybe not every audible, but just about every audible, was a run.
Mm-hmm.
And there were times – like, I can think of – it seemed like the area Iowa struggled with short yardage. And you go back to the fourth down, and this is just one of a few missed opportunities they have, and they had the lead. They attempted to go for it on fourth down, which I thought was a good call because they were going against the wind. But – they ran to the side where Nebraska overloaded instead of following the man blockers, and they ended up getting stuffed. So at what part of it would you say is just the specific audibles that are being called? Because it seemed like even then when Iowa did, you know, kill out of one particular play to go to another, it still seemed like Nebraska maybe knew what was going on.
This was one of the few handful of plays I actually seen live, actually. I was in Des Moines by the time that play actually happened. But I seen a play, and I said, wow, he didn't even get close at all on that first down try there. And it just comes down to, you know, Mark Wiseman has to be smarter where he's going to run it. And I know if things get blown up or either guy is sitting there in the spot that he's supposed to be, I mean, when you think someone to try to audible it again or something like that, that's what you would think. Hey, man, if you're getting overloaded, let's try somewhere else or whatnot. And it might come down to James Vandenberg. Aspect. If he know that the play was going right there, I mean, yes, sometimes you can tough it out, but when you see it's overloaded, you have to change it. You know, that's where it comes to you being a football player saying, hey, this is stuff. And so I think the biggest thing with Mark Wiseman is that, that's his assignment. That's where he went. But at the same time, he have to adjust what he does to also, you know, just you can't have tunnel vision. That's the biggest thing, and I think that play he had a lot of tunnel vision there.
Right, and so
here's my question then on based off that. When you talk about tunnel vision, how much of that is, you know, what they're taught? And I ask that because you always hear all the time after games, especially when they lose, oh, they didn't execute. Mm-hmm. If this is where I think it goes back to the coaching, are they being put in a position where they can even – or they're even able to execute the play? Like, if it's a situation where they're saying, okay, this is where you got to go, but Nebraska knows that, and they're overloading to that side, and it's basically a no-win situation, do you even still, you know, do that, or do you make adjustments in terms of coaching?
But the thing with a lot of, you know, and a lot of people seen in the past, that most of our audibles usually runs. And that's one thing that a lot of people know, and Coach K knew that a lot of our audibles are actually runs, in which that makes, you know, the chess game on his side becomes even more valuable. And I figure, just like I said right beforehand, is that when you actually plan against someone that's familiar with you, you have to have some kind of wrinkles. But at the same time, I get Coach Ferentz and his staff will say, hey, well, you know what? We're going to out-muscle you. It's just because you think you know what we're going to do, we're going to out-muscle you. But I really personally felt that James should have audible that play to another side or to a pass, because you know that it was an overload. And when you see overloads in a pass, and I heard it with Coach O'Keefe, you got to be a football player and change that play.
Now, here's a question I'll ask you just in general. I mean, going beyond that play, but just looking at, you know, especially the second half there with the play calling. And a lot of people I know, when this team goes 4-8 and you see the offense rank as badly as it did, a lot of the blame is being placed on Greg Davis right now. And there have been, you know, rumblings one way or the other about, you know, are they going to want to keep him on staff, or is he going to resign, or is he going to get a new contract? Just a lot of stuff that's been out there the last few days. When you – and we'll dive deeper into this in our last podcast a few weeks from now, but just looking at it right now, how would you assess what you saw out of him as an offensive coordinator over the course of the season, and I guess specifically on Friday?
I think it's unfair. I think it's kind of unfair to sit here and compare him to Coach O'Keefe, who's been here for years upon years. Mm-hmm. And this guy didn't really have a full year, let alone, what, a couple months to sit here and be able to install his offense and be able to have these guys, learn these guys. And I think what he was hired right before spring ball. So, I mean, the guys really didn't have a chance to get the playbook for the most part. And the terminology was a bit different. Yes, you have spring ball and you have summer, mm-hmm. where – Garrett Davis don't actually get a chance in the summer to sit there and talk to, I mean, not talk, but actually sit down to X's and O's, because that's right. a violation or whatnot, sitting here trying to get a couple guys huddled. Yes, you can answer some questions occasionally, hey, coach, what is this and this, but you can't actually sit down and study with Greg Davis, and that's where he has his time to recruit and things like that that he has going on. And it's just one of those deals, you know, to terminalize, you got to get that offensive court, I mean, not the offensive coordinator, but the offensive scheme and things like that underway. And you, and most of the time with the guys and skills and drills in the summertime, you're just out there just throwing, you know, you told the player whatnot. You're not sitting here and saying, okay, this is what I see in that. You're just throwing routes, you know, on air and things like that. So you don't get an aspect of sitting here getting a pass rush or anything. Most of the time it's just 7-on-7 offensive line and defensive line do their own thing and stuff like that. You don't really get a lot of team stuff unless it has changed now from what I hear. But I really feel that with Davis, a lot of people sat there and scrutinized Coach O'Keefe. And what I would say about Davis' offense is that we didn't see a lot of movement and things like that. And I'm sure in the second year, most people say, okay, this is what we wasn't successful in. We need to strengthen this. But at the same time, we need to bring in some new wrinkles. And when people look at some of the stuff that he did at Texas, you sit there and say, oh, I mean, Texas didn't do this or something like that. Because you had Vince Young, you had Colt McCoy, two different type of quarterbacks from what you see in James Vandenberg, a guy that liked to pass the ball. So hopefully these next two quarterbacks are sitting here being able to fit the mold. And yes, Texas threw a ball a lot, but they had Jamal Charles as a running back and things like that. Lyman Swede as a receiver, and Quan Cosby, and you know,
You played against his offense when you were in the Alamo Bowl back in 06.
Right, and I think personally with him is that let's give him a little bit of time. And you know, is it another year, a 1 year deal? Maybe, maybe not. And I just figured that the guy should be able to have a year. I mean, 2 years at least to be able to, possibly three to be honest with me, be able to get some guys, you know, the younger guys to be able to catch up with the older guys that are, you know, that can adapt to offensive playbooks and things like that. Just imagine some kids as having 2-3 different offensive coordinators throughout their career. But with Coach Ferentz, and I'm sure he made it a little similar to some of the play calling, a little similar, so the guys won't sit here and completely learn new things. So I think I would say at least give them this year, give them a whole full year to be able to acclimate with these guys, especially younger guys, which I feel with these quarterbacks know that playbook right now, and they're able to go in there, sit there and be a general, whoever it is that wins out.
Yeah, I personally think that he'll be retained too, and I think this is a good time for me to just mention to those of you listening that this is being pre-recorded before Kirk Ferentz talks here on Wednesday. In the event something does change, just want to have that out there, but neither one of us thinks that anything is going to be the case. The last thing I'll get to now, because as I said, we'll have one more podcast here in a few weeks. We'll, you know, dive deeper into all of this. But on the surface, you see this team go 4-8. I would imagine with you as a former player that you see that and it upsets you. And I'm sure it upsets a lot of the guys that you were teammates with that you had a lot of success with over the years. You're seeing this program and seeing how did it get to this point. From your eyes and based on what you know and what you've seen, what changes could you see coming that can maybe right the ship?
One thing I personally feel is that let's not forget that these juniors and seniors this year were on a very successful team in the Orange Bowl, and they know how it feels, and they smell the success rate and things like that. And I know the year afterwards they were ranked highly and being able to speak, you know, Rose Bowl national championship type of deal, and they underachieved quite a bit. But, you know, with the the juniors and seniors, you're the leaders of this team. And a lot of people look upon when you sit there and reload and get ready for a preview next year, you're saying, okay, this team is pretty good, locked and loaded. You know, they're pretty solid. You don't have too many holes to fill. You just pretty much, you know, making up some position to fill or whatnot. And I really feel with this team, it's going to be a rough offseason, just like I told you last week. It's going to be a rough offseason. Some of these guys is going to man up. Some of these guys are going to grow up, and a lot of guys is going to sit here and say, hey, this sucks. This really sucks, and we want to turn this thing around. And I really feel this is going to be a good time for the guys to sit there and bond and get some things going. And I personally feel that they're going to be better than 4-8. And because I know if the Coach Doyle that I know goes out there and coach these guys, and I'm sure it all started on Monday, those guys are probably sore right now, and they feel like crap. And I figure that they're going to take a next step to sitting here. I mean, the team going to play better next year. I'm sure you're going to see some aspects of the team's playing better. Whether they win, lose, we don't know. But I promise you that these guys can go out there and play next year. I can honestly tell you that one.
All right. Well, since we don't have a guest this week, so we're going to just move along here and have this be one full segment this week. And as I said before, we're going to dive in a few weeks from now. We're going to dive into everything and break it down position by position and, you know, dive deeper into what you're saying about what, you know, they could be doing as far as changes and whatnot, because I definitely want to get more of your insight on that. Looking this Saturday, because there are still games going on, you do have a Big Ten championship, and it does feature this Nebraska team that we just saw here this past Friday at Kinnick Stadium. They, you know, conversely, you look at Iowa ending on a 6-game losing streak. Nebraska, conversely, ended the season on a 6-game winning streak to get to this position where they won the Legends Division outright, and they finished 10-2. And, you know, yeah, Ohio State, you have the whole situation with them where they go undefeated, and, you know, if the whole sanctions didn't come down on them for this year, or if they weren't applied to this year, you'd be seeing them on Saturday instead of Wisconsin. But I mean, Nebraska to go 10-2 in the Big Ten, to go 7-1 in the conference, no matter how you slice and dice it, it's pretty impressive, especially considering that they were in the tougher division. We obviously won't get the predictions just yet, but when you look at Nebraska, you see this team that just came in here on Friday. I mean, yeah, they looked vulnerable at times against Iowa, but they still found a way to win, and that's really kind of been their MO throughout the season.
Yeah, no, I was going to say the biggest thing is Rex Burkhead. Right. That's the biggest aspect on their offense that hasn't been there, and that one thing with them is that they just know how to win. That's the biggest thing. They know how to win, and we've seen that in a 6-game win streak, and this is the same team that got blasted by Ohio State for about 1 million points here. So I think with Nebraska, those guys are, you know, they're learning how to win. Either it's a big win or a small, you know, a smaller version of a victory, and you know, who leads this team, the offense or the defense. So it's a good matchup, especially, you know, going against a Wisconsin team that's struggling here.
And then I guess, well, just looking at Wisconsin now, I mean, obviously we didn't get a chance to see them in person because they didn't play Iowa this year, but from the times you've watched them on TV, I mean, this is a team that's 7-5, but really I think injuries have impacted them significantly, especially at the quarterback position, because I do think when Joel Stave was in there, they had something going offensively, and it showed, like, during the month of October, they were clicking. Then he got hurt in the Michigan State game, and they kind of fallen off recently. They lost 4 games in conference, and they lost 5 games overall, but you look at those 5 losses, they're by a combined 19 points. In the last 3 games they lost, including the last 2 weeks against Ohio State and Penn State, all the games have gone to overtime. So, to me, it's almost a situation of this team really isn't that far off, but at least right now compared to Nebraska, they're probably not where they want to be or expected to be at this point in time.
And I was going to say the biggest thing, like you say, is injuries, and injuries comes with the game. So the next man in has to come in and step up. So with Wisconsin, it's just a team that's just sitting there, it's just getting the injury bug, and also that Wisconsin is a team that sit there and they tough it out, and that's the good thing about Nebraska. But you know, just watching the last game that they played against Penn State was one of those games. I picked Penn State to win that game because they were at home, and that was, you know, I thought that was a pretty good team that Penn State has, but Wisconsin is just one of those teams that's just, you know, when they lose, it's a tough loss, and that's the biggest thing with Wisconsin right now, and I like what they're doing, but hey, we'll see.
I'll say this, obviously there's been some differences, and we mentioned the quarterback issue being one, but they're they kind of remind me a little bit of Iowa from 2 years ago, where, you know, last year they had a lot of success. They won the Big Ten championship. They went to the Rose Bowl. They hung in there with Oregon. And then this year they come into the season, high expectations. Everyone's thinking, okay, Ohio State's got sanctions. Penn State has sanctions. Wisconsin's just going to be on cruise control. That never really happened. It looked like at one point in time it might, when they, you know, beat Purdue and then Minnesota the following. But then that, again, that game they lost to Michigan State at home, it was their first home loss in 3 years. And then they lose Joel Staub in that game. Then they beat Indiana in a game they needed to win to get to this position. But then, you know, Ohio State losing overtime. Penn State, personally, I don't know if maybe you'll agree with me on this or not, but then again, Wisconsin scores a touchdown. You know that you're playing a championship game next week. Why not go for two? You know, why settle for overtime in that situation, especially when you just played an overtime game the week before? I almost feel like it puts those players in a position where they could just be completely gassed right now. And if Nebraska is able to jump out to a lead early on, it probably won't be as close as the first time these teams met back in September.
Right, and that's the biggest thing. You know, I know we don't want to go too farther into right. this, but it's just one of those deals where you just go. It's the guts, though. You have nothing to lose or whatnot. Both teams didn't really have anything mm-hmm. to lose. Wisconsin knowing that they was going to the championship game, and Penn State knowing that they wanted right. to finish off the season strong. So it's just one of those deals where I think personally with Wisconsin, some of the problem can be with this coaching staff, just like yeah. here in Iowa. I mean, with with new coordinators and things like that, you lose all these guys, familiarity, and you don't know all these coaches or whatnot.
If I could just say, at the beginning of the season, I said Wisconsin wasn't going to be as good as people were making them out to be, but I also didn't necessarily expect them to go 7-5. But the coaching, since you brought that up, Paul Chris, one thing I did say back in when we did our first podcast at the beginning of the season, I said that was going to have a bigger impact than people might realize, and you could argue that certainly came to fruition this year.
Yeah, I think that also. But at the same time, it's two more teams that I want to sit here and talk about that a lot of people sat there and just completely forgot about. And that was Ohio State and Penn State, because the people thought they were going to sit there and tank and go through the emotions. Neither one of those teams actually went through the emotions at all. They went out there and played every Saturday just like everyone else. And Ohio State and Penn State, they both known that they can actually sit there and win the side of their division or whatnot. So they had something to play for. And at the end of the day, we seen Ohio State and Penn State went out there and played hard. And it's just one of those deals where Wisconsin might have forgot about those two teams. They thought everyone, not even just Wisconsin, but everyone sat there and said, hey, these teams are going to go in the tank. They don't have nothing to play for.
I mean, one thing, you and I both said this too when the season started. We both thought that maybe they weren't going to necessarily be the best team at that point in time. I don't think we thought they were the best team at that point in time. But just looking at the schedules, you and I both thought, okay, this sets up rather nicely for Ohio State, and if there's a team that could get to 10 wins, I mean, obviously Nebraska ended up getting to 10-2, but if there was one team that you thought could maybe get to double-digit victories in this conference this year, it was Ohio State. And not only did they do that, they ran the table. They went 12-0 in Urban Meyer's first year in a season where they didn't have anything to play for other than simply pride and, you know, having that goal of getting to undefeated. And now just kind of looking at the conference going forward, it almost looks like they're just they're back up on that echelon where they're almost alone. Maybe Michigan and maybe Nebraska are going to be right there with them, but for the time being, it just, you look at the future of the Big Ten, it just seems like this is going to be Ohio State's conference to lose for a while.
And I was going to say, I know we're going off topic a little bit, but Ohio State lost Jordan Hall here, who, you know, tore his PCL on top of already messing up, I think, his shoulder in the beginning of the season. Or, no, his foot. He had stepped on something with his foot. But it can be really scary next year, especially if he comes back and, you know, the playmakers are making plays. And, you know, but at the same time, I still feel Wisconsin should be there in the mix. But, you right. know, you lose Monty Ball, but I still figure that team is that program right there is a really good program. It's very similar to Iowa, but it seems like they're moving in, you know, in a upward position. Which would they still be playing at the Russell right. Wilsons and what's the name of Love? Probably not yet, but they should be right there in a solid form, solid foundation where you can sit there and be like, oh, we're going to contend for another championship here.
And if Stavik can come back healthy next year, I think they definitely could. I'll just say this about Wisconsin. They don't have anything to apologize for because, yeah, they went 7-5 and they finished third in that division. But as we've said, the two teams ahead of them had postseason sanctions. And, you know, just playing by that rule, Wisconsin, they're there. They have nothing. They have nothing to be ashamed about as far as actually being there. Now, how they look Saturday might be different. But, you know, I will say this for the Big Ten, though. I do think it would be better served for the conference if Nebraska won, just given the fact, as we said, Nebraska is 10-2. They would be 11-2. Usually a team that goes 11-2 is going to be in a BCS bowl. Right. And if, let's say, Ohio State didn't have the sanctions this year and they were the team playing the Huskers on Saturday instead of the Badgers, you'd probably be looking at two teams from the Big Ten going to BCS bowls, because if Ohio State won and played Notre Dame for the national championship, you'd still see Nebraska end up in the Rose Bowl anyway. So, to me, this is a game that I think could be a good game, but, you know, it's obviously not the matchup everyone would have preferred to see, but it still has some potential to be decent. I don't think it'll be anything quite like last year's game was, where it was back and forth and Wisconsin won at the end. It was just an entertaining game all around. They beat Michigan State, but it has potential to be a decent game.
Right, and the biggest thing, like I said, with Wisconsin is them going back to the basics, running ball with Monty Ball. Mm-hmm. And I see that they've been passing the ball quite a bit, but it's just one of those deals, like you say, it's the coaching changes. I think that's the biggest adjustment that they had to make, because when those guys were balling out last year and a year before, that was a pretty darn good team.
All right, we're going to segue now to our pick'em for this week. Yes, we still have a pick'em. And I want to congratulate Rob Brown on winning again. I know he's had quite a year winning these. You and I head-to-head, there were two games we disagreed on, and I got both of them right. Stanford ended up beating UCLA, and Notre Dame beat USC and is playing for a national championship game.
Yeah, and the biggest thing is that I was upset about the USC game because, one, Lane Kiffin pretty much gave that game away. When they still had a chance to sit there and play, it was, 5 minutes on the clock. And, you know, Money Man receiver Marquise Lee, actually made the play. And, you know, you get the two pass interference calls. Why not just keep throwing the ball, save as much time as possible, or either find some kind of way to get that ball in there when you had the ball at least at the 2-yard line at the worst.
I'll tell you what's remarkable, and here's your local angle, if you will. The fact that Brian Kelly has 5 assistants on his staff that all have ties to Iowa from back when Hayden Fry was coaching here in the 90s. Obviously, their co-defensive coordinators were both former Hawkeye players, Bobby Diaco and Kerry Cooks. And then you also have, I believe, their strength and conditioning coach was the strength and conditioning coach at Iowa before Chris Doyle arrived. Their safeties coach is Bob Elliott. He's Bump Elliott's son. And then one of their grad assistants was a defensive lineman for Hayden Fry. So it's kind of interesting to see where they have all those Iowa ties, and they're all, I mean, aside from the strength and condition, they're all on the defensive side of the ball, and that seems to be the staple of that Notre Dame team, especially with a guy like Manti Te'o.
Oh, yeah, and that's the biggest thing. I mean, Iowa has had some roots there on the defensive side where you've seen the most success with our program here. And another thing, I want to go back to the game also is that what kind of upset me was with that is that a lot of people started to give them Notre Dame a lot of credit on that goal line stands. You have to look at what Lane Kiffin was calling at those plays. You know what I mean? Yeah, the players play.
I don't disagree with that, but I will say, though, Notre Dame has shown throughout the season, I think, wasn't it only one rushing touchdown they've given up all year? That's pretty remarkable, especially since I think that was maybe even in their first game of the season against Navy. And I'll eat crow on this, because when we briefly mentioned Notre Dame in our first podcast, and I said, or second one, and I said, you know what? They'll probably win that first game against Navy, but I think they're going to struggle to get to 6-6. Well, I was wrong about that, and they ran the table, and they went through a gauntlet to get to where they are, and I think that's pretty impressive.
And the good thing is that, and not to take any credit away from them, is that this is a weaker opponent's schedule for them, but at the same time, they went in just like anyone else that goes undefeated. You have to give them credit for walking it in week in and week out to sit there and, you know, one game, one win, and so on going down the line. So I take my hats off to those guys. And it was a really good season that me or you sat there and thought anything big of that team.
Yeah.
And we'll actually jump in now to the games this week. And just a reminder to all of you, if you want to participate, just when you go to HawkeyeDrive.com, you'll see the link 24 Heisman Road. If you hover over that, the pick'em page is there. Click on that. There's a list of 10 games. Submit your picks to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Include a score with your Big Ten championship prediction for that Nebraska-Wisconsin game like we do with Iowa games when they play. We'll use that in the event of any tiebreakers that take place this season. Or this week, rather. Pardon me. We'll start with the MAC championship game Friday night. And this is very intriguing because not only do you have a pair of ranked teams in Northern Illinois and Kent State, but they're both 11-1. They both went 8-0 in conference play. So you clearly have the two best teams at conference. There's a scenario that exists here where, and I guess specifically in Kent State's case, they went 11-1. Their one loss is to Kentucky. Obviously, we all know Northern Illinois. Their one loss is the beginning of the season, Iowa. If Kent State wins, there's a good chance that they move up into the top 16 in the BCS, the final BCS standings, which means, unless the Big East makes a miraculous jump, which they won't, Kent State's going would be in a BCS bowl game, which I don't know how deserving they are of it, but the fact of the matter is that that's the rule right now. So not only is a conference title game title at stake here for these two teams, and Northern Illinois is a defending conference champ, but possibly a BCS bowl game is at stake here, you know, maybe playing something like the Orange Bowl. When you see this matchup, how do you see this one, you know, ending up between the Huskies and Golden Flashes?
I would love to root for Kent State to win this game, but what I've seen with Northern Illinois, man, they're playing with purpose, playing with a lot of destiny and things like that. They're a very tough team, and as we've seen that, I was given a lot of problems. So I'm going to go with Northern Illinois here with this game. But I still figure that Kent State is going to get – this is going to be a really good game at the end of the day. But I really feel that Northern Illinois will win this
game. I think this is going to be a really good game, too. And I'm going to agree with you on Northern Illinois simply because I think the X factor here is their quarterback, Jordan Lynch. Because, I mean, ever since – even in that Iowa game, he looked decent. But ever since then, he's just really taken off, and he's been a huge difference maker for the Huskies. And I'll say this. He's only a junior. So he's going to come back next season. And, oh, by the way, Iowa's first game – in 2013, is at Kinnick Stadium against Northern Illinois. That's the return trip for playing in Chicago this year. So that could get interesting here, especially if Northern Illinois maybe comes into that game ranked. We'll see. But I agree with you. I think the Huskies win. I don't think they'll get to the spot they need to get to a BCS bowl game like Kent State would if they won. But I agree. I think Northern Illinois wins. And I think that will provide some matchups that I think we would prefer to see. And I at least, and when I say we, I'm referring to the country, not just you and me specifically. Moving along to the other game that's going on Friday night, and it's a rematch of a game that happened this past Saturday with UCLA and Stanford. As I mentioned before, Stanford went down to Pasadena, beat UCLA pretty badly, although you have to wonder at what point was UCLA thinking, okay, let's focus on next week because they maybe didn't want to play Oregon. I don't know. I know there's been some controversy with that. But nevertheless, here's this game Friday night. It's being played up in Palo Alto at Stanford Stadium. In your eyes, do you think this is something where UCLA could bounce back and, you know, maybe show some things that they didn't present this past Saturday against the Cardinal that could be a difference? Or do you think Stanford just imposed their will to the point that they just know that they're a better team and that it's going to end up showing here?
From that game, the score says a lot to me. And just because UCLA was at home, and yes, maybe they sat there and packed the bags, but, I mean, Stanford brought everything. If you feel that they won't bring everything this week, man, UCLA got another thing thinking, and they'll probably lose way worse than what it is, you know, and I think it'll be brutal. But here's the thing with this. You go win. If you're going to go win, you know, win at home, you want to win at home once. And it's senior day for seniors. You just don't want to lose like that. I felt that Stanford brought it, and Stanford's going to bring it this week, and I actually feel that they're going to win this game because they have them. They have UCLA psyche pretty much shocked. Like, these guys really brought it, and they brought it to us at home, and what you think is going to happen on a road game. Yeah, I don't feel that Stanford went for broke. I really feel that this can be a good game, but I really feel that Stanford has the psyche of UCLA right now.
I've gone back and forth on this, and ultimately I'm going to agree with you here on this and pick Stanford as well. And the reason why is I really did think about picking UCLA this week because I figured, okay, maybe this is something where they did just kind of go vanilla with some of their plays. Maybe not, you know, pack it in, but just, you know, figure, okay, if this doesn't work, whatever. We know this doesn't work when you play them the following Friday. I think that they're going to be a little bit more creative with their play calling. And I think the one thing that does benefit UCLA here is the fact that considering last year how they kind of got the same thing that Wisconsin has this year where they benefit from a team ahead of them having postseason sanctions so they go to the Pac-12 title game against Oregon. I think that experience, at least maybe for some of the older guys, could benefit them here because they're going on the road again. It's a short week. And on top of that, you just played this team at home this past weekend. So I think in that sense, it wouldn't surprise me if UCLA won. But I agree with you. I think Stanford is just clicking right now because they not only won that game convincingly, but you go back the last few weeks, they beat Oregon State, found a way to win that game. They found a way to win at Oregon in overtime. Earlier in the year, they found a way to beat Arizona in a game that looked lost. I mean, This is a team that's gotten better as the season's progressed, and it's shown, and I think it's going to continue to show Friday night. So that's why I think, I think the Cardinal are going to end up winning and be playing in the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day. Moving along, jumping to Saturday games here. You got a few games here in the Big 12. We'll start with Oklahoma State going down to Baylor. The Cowboys, they played neck and neck with Oklahoma last week in Bedlam, and that was a heartbreaker for them, losing in overtime like they did. Especially when you consider they had a lead late in regulation, Oklahoma scored to tie it. Baylor, on the other hand, they had a comeback of their own to beat Texas Tech down at Jerry World. They got them to bowl eligibility. They have 6 wins. So the Big 12 is 9 teams total that are going to be able to go to bowls. Is this something where you think Oklahoma State could bounce back from, you know, losing like they did to Oklahoma? Or do you think Baylor just kind of keeps it going? Because, you know, not only did they beat Texas Tech, but the week before, they handed Kansas State their first loss at home.
Baylor has a lot of momentum. Let's not forget about that, just like you said. But Oklahoma State has been playing pretty good. And, you know, with the loss, just like West Virginia bounced back. And I figure that Oklahoma State will bounce back because they have a really good team here. That's a team that we should be looking out to next year in 2013 because they're going to have their quarterback. Either quarterback is going to be a really good one, but with a lot of experience. So I'm looking for Oklahoma State to actually win this game on the road. Even though it's going to be a nice shootout, what we love to watch.
It's going to be a shootout, no question. I'm going to disagree and say Baylor wins because, as you said, I think Baylor's clicking right now because you beat a team like Kansas State when they had everything on the line. And Baylor, at that point in time, I mean, they're playing for their bowl lives. And, you know, on one hand, you could say, well, okay, they got to where they needed to get to, so maybe they don't go as hard this Saturday. But I feel like when you win like that against Kansas State and then you follow that up by beating a rival like you did on the road in overtime or I guess on a neutral field, it just gives you confidence because you know Baylor can score. And then conversely, I look at Oklahoma State and I just feel like there might be a carryover, if you will, from what happened last week. I just feel like this could be a game where Baylor gets out ahead early on and that just ends up being the ultimate difference. Or, you know, maybe they do get their one or two stops early on, and Oklahoma State's just playing from behind the rest of the way. That's kind of how I see it shaking out, and that's ultimately why I think Baylor will end up finding a way to win. But I agree. I think this is going to be a pretty entertaining game to watch on Saturday. Moving along, another Big 12 game going on Saturday morning. You got Oklahoma, who still has a shot at winning the Big 12 if they can get some help from Texas later on Saturday night. They're also hoping for Northern Illinois to beat Kent State, too. Otherwise, they might be, you know, screwed out of a BCS spot. But they go to TCU. TCU's coming off a win over Texas on Thanksgiving night that I think caught a lot of people by surprise. Oklahoma, they win. At the very worst, it looks like they could end up in the Sugar Bowl if they do get that second BCS spot and play in Florida. Do you see things continuing to click here for the Sooners after winning like they did this past weekend, or do they look vulnerable enough that TCU might be able to pull an upset?
One thing I'm going to say about this game is that TCU has been a team that's been playing really tough. And the reason why I say playing really tough is because they lost a quarterback, which was a stud last year here, and they brought in a younger guy that they feel that has really got the team clicking, and they playing some really good football here in the Big 12 this year. And this was the team that we thought, you know, they go through their growing pains and whatnot throughout the Big 12 schedule. And this team has been really toughened up and played really hard and got a couple good wins out of this conference. So I think them and West Virginia might be able to sit there and acclimate a little bit much better. And I thought these two teams would actually do better than the SEC teams. And actually, I thought that with Nebraska, they just went through a hard time last year. But I really look for Oklahoma to actually win this game. But the biggest thing is that I think they're going to start off slow, especially because they're on a roll here.
I agree with you there. I'm going to pick Oklahoma, and I could see a very similar start as well, because I would also throw in TCU probably has as good a defense as they've seen in, you know, maybe a month. Right. Because Oklahoma, they played Oklahoma State. That was a shootout. They played West Virginia. That's a shootout. I mean, the last two games that they played, there's been a combined 99 points in each of the last two games, so which is pretty incredible when you think about it. It went 50-49, 51-48. I agree. I think Oklahoma wins because I ultimately just think that they're a better team, and I do think it'll get to a point where if Landry Jones does have any struggles, they can put Blake Bell in there, and he could be a game changer. So I think with all that being said, I agree with you on the Sooners, and I do think that there, since we both have Northern Illinois winning, I do think Oklahoma's going to end up probably – well, we'll just say in a BCS game because we still got to get to Texas, Kansas State. But I think you'll see them playing in one of the big games in early January. Moving along now, Conference USA Championship game. This is a rematch from a matchup 2 weeks ago with Central Florida taking on Tulsa. Central Florida, beginning of the season, there was wonders because they had some postseason sanctions. It looked like that they weren't going to be eligible to go to this game or to a bowl game this year, but then they got those appealed. And they played Ohio State early in the season. They played them pretty tough over in the Horseshoe. You look at Tulsa, two of their losses, they lost last week, and they had a Hail Mary at the end of that game where, like, they were literally about a yard shy of tying the game against SMU. But one of their losses is at the very beginning of the season to Iowa State when Iowa State looked decent. And then they also had a loss to Arkansas by, like, 4 points. But otherwise, they've coasted through Conference USA. Tulsa won the first meeting when they met a couple weeks ago by 2 points. Do you see that happening again, or do you think Central Florida can bounce back?
Really, I think this game is actually going to be kind of bothered here by Tulsa's athletic director or whatnot, and, you know, what's going on with him betting on games, which is not good here as an athletic director. But I really feel that Tulsa is one of those teams that's always been a stable there in Conference USA, and I really feel that they're going to win this game. But UCF has a really good running back, and I really feel that they're going to be able to run the ball, but it's too much Tulsa.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you here, because mainly because Tulsa is at home, and they had the upper hand the first time around, I think. And when you consider that it was real recently, I feel like if that game had been played further back, that might give Central Florida a little bit more of an edge, because you could see some, you know, changes from, say, early October to now. But considering that it was just 2 weeks ago, that tells me Tulsa had an upper hand then. They still have an upper hand now, so I agree with you there. Boise State, this is usually the team that is a BCS buster, and they still have a shot at winning the Mountain West. They go to Nevada. This is a Nevada team that's always played them pretty tough, and 2 years ago actually beat Boise State near the end of the season, cost Boise State a BCS bowl, possibly a spot in the national championship game. This game is being played in Reno. Boise State maybe has a shot at a – I don't think their chances are as good with Northern Illinois and Kent State both there, but they still maybe have a shot at a BCS bowl, because a lot of things went their way this past weekend when they had their bye. Does Boise State get it done, at the very least win their conference here and finish off a 10-2 season, or – could Nevada pull the upset?
No, I really feel that Boise State has been a team that's been running under the radar here all season long, just because they're not in the top 10 or so, looking for a national championship berth or a BCS berth. So I really feel that Boise State is going to toughen up here and win the game at Reno this year and take care of business and finish off a successful season as they always have.
I'm going to call the upset here and say Nevada pulls it off, and mainly because I think Boise State is a really good defense, but their offense has been an issue, and I think it could very well be an issue because Nevada is a team that likes to run and gun, and they run the pistol. They've been known for that. And And they also have a stud running back in Stephon Johnson, who I believe is second nationally in rushing behind Arizona's running back right now, and maybe has a shot at becoming the nation's leading rusher by the end of this game. I don't know if he'll get to that, but I think he could have a big game, and I think that that's going to set the tone for Nevada to pull an upset here. So I like them to end up beating Boise State, but I think this could be a really good game that goes down to the wire. Now the big one, where it's the SEC championship. You got Alabama, Georgia. They're identical, 11-1 records. Georgia is in this game based on beating Florida head-to-head. And the winner of this game is going to play Notre Dame for the national championship. That much we do know. With these two teams, do you see, I guess I'll just put it this way, who's Notre Dame going to be playing down in Miami? Is it going to be the Crimson Tide, or is it going to be the Georgia Bulldogs?
I really feel I'm going with the upset here. This is going to be my upset pick here of the week. And just like I've been thinking all year long, just like Johnny Football, he's going to upset Alabama. I really feel if Bama is actually going to get back in that picture to sit here in an SEC championship and Georgia was sitting there at the same time, they got a chance here. I really feel that Georgia has a chance. They have the best quarterback in the nation when it comes to accuracy and things like that. I love Aaron Murray and Tony Dungy. Love him also. He feels that he's the best quarterback in the country right now. One thing with me, I feel that Georgia has been going through a lot. Ups and downs. Fan people, you know, fans, they want to get their coaches fired and all this stuff. You know what? He's going to sock it to them, and he's going to win this game versus Bama. And I just feel that Aaron Murray is going to lead those guys to the promised land.
I don't want to steal your thunder here, but I'm going to agree with you. I actually, the more I think about it, I think this sets up perfectly for Georgia because, yeah, a lot of people are going to look at the stats and say, oh, Alabama is just a better team across the board. But to me, this is where I would differentiate these teams. I think both teams have really good quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. I would agree Aaron Murray is probably a little bit better than A.J. McCarron, although McCarron does have the national championship to his name, and he's performed very well for Alabama this year. But what I feel is going to end up being the difference, well, two things. One, Georgia's been in this position many times, including last year they played LSU in the SEC title game. Two, even though the competition hasn't really been all that great, I feel like they're a team that's gotten better as the season's progressed, not just because, you know, they got guys back from suspensions, but you just look at the defensive side of the ball. They have just their entire back seven specifically, they are just loaded with playmakers. Obviously, it starts with Jarvis Jones, who's, I mean, aside from Manti Te'o, might be the best defensive player in the country this year. Him, Alec Ogletree, getting him back is big for the linebacking core. You have a guy like Bakari Rambo, who's All-American last year. You have him in the secondary. You have other guys in the secondary. I feel like they're going to be able to make plays and force turnovers, and then it's just going to come down to, hey, can Aaron Murray make plays for the Georgia offense? I feel like this is going to be his moment to shine, and I think he's going to find a way to do it. And I think that also, too, the fact that this game is being played in Atlanta has a bit of a home crowd, obviously, for the Bulldogs. I mean, obviously, Alabama will travel well, but I think this is setting up nicely for, you know, Georgia to make that run. And you look at a guy like Mark Richt, I think this is a guy that's gone through a lot, and this is going to be his moment, if you will. I don't know if this means that they're going to end up beating Notre Dame in the title game, but I'm with you here. I think Georgia's going to find a way to win this game, and I hope it's an entertaining game.
I'll say one thing that I feel that if it's going to be a weakness for Georgia, it's going to be their running backs. You know, with those guys being younger guys, and I know Alabama has, you know, they have the experience there, and they got a younger guy that makes plays also. But the biggest thing, I think, Georgia's running backs. And I think, like you say, as a team start winning, the running backs get, you know, they get a little bit more experience, and they feel comfortable, and they're confident about themselves.
And if I could just elaborate, too, on where I feel like Georgia's gotten better as the season's progressed. Yeah, that one loss to South Carolina, they got drilled. But you know what? At the time, we all thought South Carolina was a better team because they were fully healthy. They had Connor Shaw. They had Marcus Lattimore, Jadeveon Clowney. None of them were dealing with injuries. But Georgia, you know, listen, they beat Florida. They're the one team that beat Florida. Everybody's saying, well, how come Florida's not getting a shot to play for the national championship? Well, here's why. Georgia beat them head-to-head. They won the division. I mean, yeah, okay, Georgia Tech's not all that great, but they manhandled them like they should last week at home. You look at a team like Alabama, they haven't really gotten a chance to prove that they've, you know, fully bounced back from that loss to Texas A&M because they've played the likes of Western Carolina and Auburn. I mean, those are games you're thinking, okay, Alabama should be win convincingly. This is their first true test since then, and I think I don't know if they're going to be as fully prepared for it as they normally might be Whereas I feel Georgia, you know, they've had some battles here as the season's gone on. The defense has been able to perform a lot better than it was earlier in the year. That's why, at the end of the day, I think Georgia ultimately has an edge. Mm-hmm. And then moving along here to the ACC championship game, you got Florida State. They're coming off a rather embarrassing loss to Florida. I mean, yeah, Florida ended up playing like the better team. But, you know, Florida State did have a lead in the fourth quarter, but they got humiliated on their home field, because not only did they lose that lead, but Florida just flat out outclassed them, it looked like, at times there in the fourth quarter. And now they're going into this game against a Georgia Tech team that is, I mean, the only reason they're in this game is because of Miami self-imposing a bowl ban. Otherwise, Miami would be playing, and the ACC would have that matchup that they've been dreaming about for 8 years. But the thing that's also messed up here, too, is with Georgia Tech, because they're 6-6, this could be very similar to what happened with UCLA. They don't win this game. Yeah. They're 6-7. They might not go to a bowl game. They have to get a waiver or file an appeal and get a waiver, which to me, it doesn't make sense. I feel like this is a team that should be allowed to play in a bowl regardless, because they went 6-6. And if Miami, it's not their fault that Miami has all these issues that they're dealing with. So why should they be punished? It's essentially punishing two ACC teams instead of zero. And if Miami was playing in this game, Georgia Tech would be 6-6. They'd be bowl eligible, and no one would be discussing this. But instead, and you throw Miami in there too, they were 7-5, so they would still be going to a bowl game regardless. So I think that's a little bit unfair. But as far as this game goes, I don't see Georgia Tech standing much of a chance here against Florida State. Even though Florida State has some injuries on the defensive side ball, I think the Seminoles are a much better team. And this is a team that we always felt was going to probably win the ACC, because it has been the class of the ACC this year. I don't see Saturday being any different.
My biggest question is, Stoops actually coached this game? And I think with him taking a job, I thought it was a little early.
Job at Kentucky, yeah.
Yeah, and I just felt that with him taking a job at Kentucky right before the game, it kind of sit here and take his focus away from the team a little bit. You know,
which that could be an impact, considering Georgia Tech has that triple option attack.
That's right. And because, you know, it's people from Kentucky like, hey, you're our guy, you know, hey, you need to do this, you need to do that. And he's like, hey, I need to take care of my job. And just all over the place, you know, with, you know, family and friends congratulating him and things like that. So I think he got a lot on his plate here this week. Hopefully he does coach. I'm sure that he probably will coach this game. And with Georgia Tech, like you said, with that triple option, you have to be prepared and play some sound football. But just like you say, I don't see Georgia Tech standing any chance in this game, because Florida State is a really good team that lost to a really good team last week. And I just feel that Florida State is just one of those deals. I picked them to go to the national championship, yes, but it's just one of those deals. E.J. Manuel will go out with a bang here, and I really look for him to hopefully, you know, it might not happen, but him still getting a chance to sit there and get into a BCS game.
Yeah, and I'll just say this too, and I think back to when you played them, when you played Georgia Tech in the Orange Bowl. The teams that seem to do pretty well against Georgia Tech, at least in my eyes, are the teams that have athletes on the defensive side of the ball. Georgia's a perfect example of that, as we were just mentioning before, because they just destroyed Georgia Tech this past weekend. Florida State still has plenty of athletes on that side of the ball, and therefore I think that they'll be fine, regardless of what happens to Stoops. That might be a distraction for sure, but at the end of the day, I don't see it being enough of a distraction that an upset takes place here. So I agree with you. I think Florida State wins, and they'll be playing in the Orange Bowl. Big 12, you got a game Saturday night featuring Texas coming off, again, that loss to TCU on Thanksgiving at home. They're going up to Kansas State, who's had 2 weeks to stew over losing that game to Baylor and losing a shot at going for a national championship, and probably in Colin Klein's case, losing the Heisman Trophy. This game's it's December 1st, so you factor that in, it's at night, it's in Kansas, it's going to be cold. Kansas State has had Texas's number over the last, you know, 6-7 years here. And you have Texas coming in now with a backup quarterback with Case McCoy starting. This just has a recipe of disaster here. I think K-State wins. I think they win big. And you're going to see them in the winning the Big 12, going to the Fiesta Bowl, which would then send Oklahoma to the Sugar to play Florida. So, Yeah, I like Kansas State to bounce back in a big way here.
This game, just like you said, it's a recipe for disaster, and it can get really ugly here with a lot of Texas fans. You know, a lot of people sit here and they looked at that game on Thanksgiving and said, "Wow, this is ridiculous how we're losing a lot of a lot of turnovers and things like that." And then you know, you sit there and after this game, you know, just like they say, that Black Monday come around for college coaches and for the guys that's playing this week or so on. You got Mac Brown that might get that knock on the door saying, "Hey, we don't want you anymore." And I think this game has a lot on the line for Texas. And I figure that Texas is going to play really hard. And hopefully they play hard enough to where their coach don't get fired. But like you say, it's senior day at Kansas State. And Kevin Klein is going to go out big. And I think they went home in a very cold environment there. So I'm going with Kansas State to win this game at home.
And now finally, the Big Ten championship game. You got Nebraska. Again, 10-2, 7-1, won the Legends Division outright. They're taking on a Wisconsin team who's the beneficiary of Ohio State and Penn State having sanctions, but nevertheless, Wisconsin is in this game, and they're gunning for their third straight Big Ten title and third straight appearance in the Rose Bowl. The winner of this game is going to play the winner of that UCLA-Stanford game on that's happening Friday night. They'll meet on New Year's Day in Pasadena. Which one of these teams is smelling roses, Nebraska, Wisconsin?
Man, I'm going with my pick. I picked early in the season. I'm going with Nebraska, and I feel that Nebraska, after watching their film that they, they were losing big here against Wisconsin earlier in the season at home, I really feel that they're going to bounce back and win this game. And the reason why they're winning this game, they're going to play some tough defense, get Rex Burkhead his carries, and be able to mix it in. You know, he probably won't be the feature back anymore, Abdullah, to sit there and give Rex Burkhead a little bit more recovery time. Unless he's ready to go. So I really feel that Taylor Martinez would send him off to the promised land, but the defense is the key to this game.
I agree with you on Nebraska winning, and I'll just say this. Well, first of all, I guess if I'm going to give a prediction, I'm going to say 24-17, but I think it's going to be a closer – or I don't think it will be as close as the score indicates. I think it's going to be one of those games where Nebraska jumps out to a big lead early on, and then Wisconsin, not necessarily a comeback, but they make the score, closer than it appears. To me, what I see being the concern here, and I mentioned it before, Wisconsin coming off consecutive, not just consecutive losses, but consecutive losses where both games went to overtime. I just feel like my concern at the Badgers here is they're going to be gassed coming into this game. They might be revved up when they're in a championship setting, and they have experience because they were in this game a year ago, but they're clearly not the same team that they were last year. We all knew that. And when they did play Nebraska back in September, that was at a point in time where Joel Stave elevated himself into that role as their quarterback. They had a lead in that game in part because he was performing well, as was Monte Ball. And he got hurt in that game, so they put Danny O'Brien in. And then that's when you saw Nebraska come from behind and end up winning that game 30-27. I feel like if Stave had still played in that game and didn't get hurt, maybe Wisconsin holds on. But here, you don't even have him. You have Kurt Phillips as their quarterback now. The good news for Wisconsin is it sounds like Jared Aberderis will be able to play. He had been dealing with a concussion. It sounds like he'll be able to go. But even then, they're going to need him to have a big game. They're going to need to have Ball to have a big game offensively. Nebraska, I go back to similar things to what you were saying. Yeah, they have some injury issues, in particular on the defensive side of the ball. But I still think they'll be okay as far as the interior goes on both sides. And getting Rex Burkhead back, the fact that he came in the second half and looked against Iowa and looked like he did, I think that's huge for them going forward because now they know he can play this Saturday. And I think he's still going – and I don't remember if he even played against Wisconsin or not. If he did, I don't think he was all that effective. You have him and Abdullah, Taylor Martinez. The key for him is just not making mistakes early on because that was something that he did do and really Nebraska as a team was doing against Iowa. And then obviously Iowa just wasn't able to convert. If Nebraska can avoid that early on, I think they're going to jump out to a pretty big lead early here. And while the score will end up being close, I just think Nebraska, you're going to clearly see a difference between which team is better. And at the end of the night, I think the Cornhuskers are going to be the team celebrating, and you're going to be seeing them in that Rose Bowl against Stanford on New Year's Day.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really good game. I figure that this is going to be a good game, but like you say, I think Wisconsin is going to be gas, and I think last week we're pretty much – well, the last 2 weeks we actually beat them this week. So I think this is just like we both will agree. If this game with Nebraska beating Wisconsin 2 weeks ago, you think think Nebraska still had the upper hand because they were at home and, you know, they came back. But that game was, you know, a month ago, and Wisconsin is like, hey, we can pull this together. But, you know, you're losing two weeks in a row, and then you run into a team that came back and beat you. You feel that your confidence is going to be shot pretty much.
Well, I mean, they're just really kind of going through a gauntlet because, as you mentioned, Ohio State and Penn State, those are still really good teams. Yeah. And, yeah, you took them to overtime. That's great. But you didn't win in either scenario, and now you're going up against another really good team.
Let's not forget Wisconsin. They shouldn't have actually been in that Ohio State game, if you ask me, because they went down early, and they pretty much managed to come back to even pull off that one. I just felt that with the Penn State game, that was much of a closer game or whatnot, but just like you say, they shouldn't have lost that game.
And so, yeah, we agree. Nebraska's a better team. They're going to end up winning this game and playing in the Rose Bowl. And I guess finally here, I didn't list this, but I'll get your thoughts because I know we did this last year. Since the next time we meet will be after this is announced, Heisman Trophy, how do you see this shaking out? Because I think it's fairly obvious now that it's between two, maybe three guys. Johnny Manziel, Texas A&M. Manti Te'o, Notre Dame. Maybe Colin Klein from K-State if he has another really solid performance here Saturday night against Texas. But I guess if it came down to those three, how do you – and maybe Marquise Lee as well, but how do you see this shaking out? Who do you see hoisting that trophy?
Colin Klein has to really have a really great game. You asked me to really take him above the other two guys. I really feel that he's going to have a good game. You know, it's his last game at home in Manhattan or whatnot, but I don't think he will overdo Johnny Manziel. And the reason why I say that is just because he's more of a vanilla guy, Johnny Manziel. He made almost his plays off of broken up plays, and a lot of people like that. He's like a Tebow guy. You know, he's not as fiery, but he's one of those guys you just like to see play and things like that. But then you have Manti Te'o. You know, a guy that had, you know, made an interception last week, and for the most part, that defense pretty much toughened up. So it's in play for him. But I really feel at the end of the day, Johnny Football will win his Heisman Trophy just because he has a lot of momentum going in this. And Manti Te'o is just one of those guys that always been there. He didn't have the monster game that I really felt that he needed this past weekend against a really good team. But Klein has a chance. He has a really good chance against a team that's been up and down. But Johnny Manziel will take this one here.
And you know what? A week ago, I'm not sure if I would have agreed or not, but after watching games last Saturday night, I do have to agree with you here. Because simply, the thing that stood out to me when I was watching part of A&M's game against Missouri, he actually got hurt in that game. Yeah. And then you saw how much the offense was struggling without him. Then he came back in, and it seemed like they weren't missing a beat. And then you throw in, too, he accounted for more yards total offense than anyone else in SEC history. This is a record set 2 years ago by Cam Newton, and he did it in more games than Johnny Manziel did. And then throw in there, he was a runaway winner for the Heisman Trophy that year. I know he's a redshirt freshman, but those numbers and in that conference, that's hard to just, you know, scoff at. And then throw in the fact, too, that they won at Alabama at a time when a lot of people thought, and myself included, that they were clearly the most dominant team in college football at that point. And to win that game in Tuscaloosa, I think that's kind of the Heisman moment. You know, that's not saying that Te'o didn't have any key moments, because he absolutely did throughout the season for Notre Dame, but he never really had that one moment that made you think, wow, this guy's got the Heisman. Like, you think back over the years, you have Desmond Howard, that punt return against Ohio State. That's a Heisman moment. You know, you have Carson Palmer when he beat out Brad Banks. His game against Notre Dame, that was like, okay, he's clearly established that this is his. You know, Ricky Williams breaking the record. You can go on and on and on. Te'o had a lot of moments, but nothing quite that extraordinary. And you look at Manziel, he had that moment. It just came a few weeks earlier than, you know, a few weeks ago as opposed to, just say, this past weekend. But I do think that ends up making a difference. And the fact, too, that A&M went 10-2. Their first year in the SEC and with a first-year head coach there. And with him as a redshirt freshman as quarterback, I mean, that's pretty remarkable. As you said, neither one of us really had high expectations for A&M going into this year. To do that's quite a feat. And, yeah, I think Manziel's more than worthy of hoisting the Heisman Trophy, so I agree with you. I think he's going to be the one that wins it. It's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. And just a reminder, we won't be back next week, obviously. We're going to let a few weeks kind of subside here. But we will have one final podcast here where we kind of recap Iowa season as a whole. And then we'll discuss some of the bowl games, including all the BCS games and any games involving Big Ten teams. Again, you can follow Chris on Twitter at CRowell34. You can follow me on Twitter at TheBStyles. You can follow Hawkeye Drive on Twitter at Hawkeye Drive. And just a reminder for anyone who wants to become a member of HawkeyeDrive.com, we offer a 3-day free trial. It gives you access to everything on the site. And then if you like that and you want to subscribe, we have monthly and yearly subscriptions, $9.99 a month, $89.99 a year. Payments are recurring. Give you access to everything on the site, both free and premium. And, Chris, I want to thank you again, as always, especially here, considering how early it is. A little earlier than usual for us on Wednesday, but I appreciate the time that you spent, not just today, but really all season long, and I look forward to having you on again one last time here before the year ends.
Oh, yeah. Well, as if we talk about it, we look for a good week of football, and I think it will be a good week of football. Some of the games that we look forward to seeing, I hope that things happen, because the BCS is really unique this year, where we can have some people that really crash a party and some people scratch their heads and say, we don't want to watch this game. But at the end of the day, you lace it up every week to see some really good football. And if those guys win, bust it, where you have Kent State jump in or so, it's just one of those deals. They played their hearts out. They beat everyone that they played pretty much every week except that one loss. So I just look for a good week of football.
Yep, same here. And, again, like I said, we won't be back next week. It'll definitely be sometime before Christmas. That I can say. So just be on the lookout here in the coming weeks for when we post that final Talking Hawks podcast. For Chris, thank you again. And for Chris Rowell, I'm Brendan Styles. We'll see you in a few weeks.